Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is...
And are they both trying not to laugh at the word duty?
Yeah.
Technically correct.
Why is she speaking?
Because
like...
they learned English from Professor Magoo over there.
Relax, we'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
What's up?
Hello, boats on the Bellagio fountain. The NFL draft is going to take over the strip. There is a Clark County Commissioner meeting right now where they are unveiling their plans for the NFL draft this spring in Las Vegas. And it looks like the main stage will be over the Bellagio fountains. We'll get into that in a little bit. We also have Lights FC manager Eric Winalda on the show simply to pester and annoy him. But we start with at least a little bit of UNLV basketball because UNLV's been the most efficient offense in Mountain West play so far this season. And a major reason why is that UNLV is shooting the second highest percentage on two-point shots in conference play. It has been one of the biggest flips of this team. They are now making their layups. Earlier in the season, UNLV was bottom 100 in the country in field goal percentage at the rim. They were under 55% for the season. Now they're up to 60% for the season, which is the average number in college basketball. And in just in conference play, they've been one of the 100 best teams in the country at finishing at the rim. So they've gone from 100 worst to 100 best finishing at the rim. Bryce Hamilton has been the big change. He has become a player that can get to the rim when he needs to and is finishing at an extremely high rate. Amori Hardy's gotten better. He was down around 50%. He's already gotten back up to 54% for the year. And Nick Blair, by the way, leads the team, finishing at 78% around the rim. He doesn't shoot often, but when he does, he's wide open and it goes in. So UNLV has done a terrific job finishing at the rim. One negative side so recently, though, Donnie Tillman can't make a layup anymore. He was 3 for 11 at the rim against New Mexico. He is now 49% on layups this season. That's brutal for a guy that's supposed to be playing power forward for you, to be under 50%. The good news is UNLV doesn't necessarily need him at the moment because of the play of Bryce Hamilton and Marvin Coleman. Donnie Tillman has become less important of a player than we thought he was going to be. But 49% is still a brutal number. And what's funny to me on this is sort of the expectation I was holding for next season, right? All throughout the season, we've talked about UNLV getting good shots. They've been getting the efficient shots. They've been getting shots at the rim. They've been getting a lot of threes, and they've been getting a lot of free throws, right? Those are the three things you highlight for what are efficient shots in basketball. They've been getting them. They just haven't been making them. And so I've been talking about, all right, well, next season they get David Jenkins in here and TJ Altzelberger turns over the roster with his giant 2020 recruiting class. Next year's offense should take off because they're getting the shots they're supposed to get. So when you get the players that can make them, it's going to be excellent. Somehow that happened in season. Like somehow it's been this year, oh, we're going to finish all the shots at the rim. It is a little bit of the faster pace of play because transition leads to more uncontested layups than half court offense does, but they've only been playing faster the last two games. The rest of the Mountain West play has been slow, and they've been finishing at the rim anyway. So this team regressed to the mean in season and have the best offense in the Mountain West right now. It's fairly unbelievable. Like that we spent the entirety of this season talking about, they can't make layups. What are you going to do? They can't make layups. And now they are. So UNLV, number one offense in the Mountain West. Do you want to get to some football or stadium use or lack of use for UNLV? Because it looks like the Raiders really don't care about UNLV, like at all. They really don't want them holding any games in that stadium. We go back to the ceremonial topping off of the Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders raised a beam with three flags on it, Raiders flag, American flag, State of Nevada flag. There was no UNLV flag on there. Wasn't that big of a deal, but it's pretty good symbolism for where UNLV's place is at Allegiant Stadium. The Raiders would prefer they didn't exist. We've known for a couple of months now that there is a dispute between UNLV and the Raiders about how many games UNLV will get to play at the stadium in the first season. The lease UNLV signed with the Raiders is poorly worded. It says that UNLV will be allowed to play two home non-conference games at Allegiant Stadium every year after the first season. The reasoning for that is UNLV, when they signed this agreement, already had three home non-conference games scheduled for the 2020 season. So they wanted to have more than two this year. But it's phrased in a way that doesn't guarantee them any non-conference home games in the 2020 season. So there is an extra clause that does say, hey, your game against August 29th against Cal will be played at the stadium. So that's the only one they have guaranteed based on their lease agreement. And we have the problem, ultimately, of the Raiders having full control of the stadium and the scheduling of the stadium, because they can approve or deny UNLV's scheduling pretty much at every turn. This looks like it's going to be a dispute that has to go to the Stadium Authority Board, and they'll have to decide on whether or not UNLV can use the stadium for the games against Louisiana Tech and Arizona State in September. But the Review Journal had a story on this over the weekend, and Mark Bedain, who is the president of the Raiders, he gave one hell of a response to why they're not giving UNLV those dates in September for the Louisiana Tech and Arizona State game. Mark Bedain said, right now, we're saving that availability for Raider games. We may need it for concerts and other events.
Fair, I guess.
It's not fair, though. So if we look, so Mark Bedain might have given UNLV a very strong argument to use the stadium on the dates that they want them. Because if you read through UNLV's lease agreement, UNLV has priority over some things at the stadium. They do not have priority over any Raider or NFL events, right? If there's ever a Raider NFL event on a Saturday or something, UNLV has no chance to play there. That's perfectly fine, right? That stadium was built for the Raiders primarily. If for whatever reason they've got a game on Saturday, that's fine. The other thing that has priority over UNLV is previously scheduled events. So if the Raiders scheduled a concert or some soccer game or whatever on Saturday in September, that takes precedence over UNLV. The problem for Mark Bedain saying we're saving that for concerts is that they don't have anything scheduled already. And UNLV's schedule has been done for a while. So based on their lease agreement, he can't say no to UNLV because he might schedule a concert. That's breaking the lease that he has with UNLV. So if it's because they're saving it for a concert, he can't do that. So he might have given UNLV an extremely excellent argument to still have those dates. Like when this goes to the Stadium Authority Board, if he's saying, hey, well, we're going to save it for a concert. No, you had to have that scheduled before UNLV had theirs scheduled, and they didn't, because UNLV's was scheduled in 2015. So he can't make that argument. That's breaking the lease. So UNLV might actually have a way to win this if that's what Mark Bedain is going to go with. Now, if he goes with Raider games, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to say a Raider game would knock UNLV out of a Saturday, because the NFL doesn't play Saturday games in September. But there was a video put out by the Allegiant Stadium Twitter handle yesterday that had an interesting detail. It was actually of John Gruden touring the facility. But one of the guys that's working at the stadium said on a typical NFL weekend, they will roll the grass that the Raiders are going to play on into the stadium on Friday and let it, quote, get acclimated to being inside, and then play a game on Sunday. So there's a chance, when Mark Bedain says we're saving it for Raider games, that the Raiders don't want UNLV to play on the same weekend as them.
Well, that'll be a problem.
Yeah, it will be quite a big one, because there's going to be I guess you could work every single year, every single weekend with the NFL to never have a UNLV and a Raider game on the same weekend. But, at some point it's going to happen, right? At some point it has to happen. So I don't know if that's an actual reasoning the Raiders are going with, but that was just a small detail in a video they put out yesterday that made me think, they might actually try to keep UNLV from playing on the same weekends of them every single time. But I think UNLV might actually have some way to do this. They might actually have some way to win this argument. The problem is you're relying on the Stadium Authority Board, who, granted, they're a public body, so you would think a public body would protect the public institution trying to play in a publicly funded stadium, but the private institution is going to get the benefit. That's the best part of this, is a publicly funded stadium is not going to let a public university play a game there because a private institution wants to make money. That's ultimately what's going to end up happening here, and it's going to be hilarious. I am curious, though, if we look long-term, if the Raiders are simply just trying to kick UNLV out of the stadium, not kick them out, but drive UNLV out of the stadium. Because if we go back to when this lease agreement was finalized, it had to go through the Board of Regents. And the Board of Regents were actually critical of this deal. Like, not everybody in the Board of Regents was on board with this stadium was going to be this great thing for UNLV football. And the Board of Regents demanded that a clause be put into the lease agreement that said UNLV could leave. Like, it wasn't in there initially. They were like, hey, we need a clause in here that says UNLV can terminate this with no penalty or anything like that. And everybody was like, why would you need that? And they were like, we don't care. We want it in there. So they got it in there. They got it. There's a clause in there that just says, you know, UNLV can terminate this lease if they want to. So I kind of get the sense that the Raiders are kind of trying to treat UNLV so that UNLV says, all right, whatever, we'll leave. We're gone. No, thank you. We'll just play at Sandpoint. We'll be fine. We'll be better off just knowing where we're going to play our games, knowing that we can actually schedule these things without you trying to schedule a concert or roll your damn grass in so we can get acclimated to being inside.
So this is the, like, worst way to get, like, you don't want to break up with the person, but you're going to do everything in your power to get them to break up with you.
Because they're not legally allowed to break up with UNLV. They're just allowed to make it really annoying for UNLV to play here. Really annoying. Like, they have almost all of the control. Technically, the Stadium Authority Board has to, like, approve and deny everything, but from what we've seen out of the state, these are the people that didn't ask a question about the roof that's been delayed on a stadium that's opening in 8 months. So there's not much reason to think the Stadium Authority Board is actually going to, like, defend UNLV or question the Raiders or anything. So, yes, the Raiders ultimately have the power here, and they can kind of say, yeah, let's just make UNLV's life really, really difficult. By the way, on the idea of the grass, if the grass has to roll in on a Friday night before a Raiders game on Sunday, that means you can't have a Friday night event or a Saturday event anytime before there's a Raiders game, which seems dumb. Like,
people don't go to concerts on Fridays and Saturday nights.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It just seems dumb that, like, that. And again, I don't know if that's actually what's going to have to happen every time they play a game. Surely they can roll the grass in the same day and it'll be acclimated enough to play on it. But I don't actually know. But if that's what their plan is, you're basically saying you can't have any Friday or Saturday events in the fall when the Raiders are at home, which, I don't know, would be strange to me, would be counterintuitive to me if that's actually going to be the case. But we'll see. Technically correct. It's brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Lacrosse is coming to the Orleans Arena on February 1st. The Colorado Mammoth take on the San Diego Seals, marking the first ever Major League Lacrosse game in Las Vegas. For tickets and more information, visit OrleansArena.com. Technically correct. It's brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. The best spot to place your bets is the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook. But if you're looking for even more convenience, download the Be Connected Sports app from BeConnectedSports.com. The Be Connected Sports app makes it easy to place bets from your phone or tablet and allows you to bet during the game. So download the Be Connected Sports app and you can be just a few clicks away from betting on the biggest games whenever you want. Boyd Gaming has you covered at the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook or at BeConnectedSports.com. Thank you for not fast-forwarding through the ad. This is a podcast exclusive. We have tickets to UNLV against San Diego State on Sunday. The first person to email me at tyler.bischoff@lvradio.com or tweet at me @Bischoff_Tyler with the correct answer will win. Here's the question for you. What is Donnie Tillman's field goal percentage on layups and dunks this season?
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
The NFL draft stage will be over the Bellagio fountains.
Maybe. I'm questioning my ability to read a map right now. Is the red carpet stage the same thing as the, like, is that where Roger Goodell is?
I don't know.
I don't either.
But based on the mock-up, it looks very similar to previous year's draft stages. So maybe that's just where he announces the pick, because I don't know how you get a floating green room.
They're going to have boats take the prospects onto the stage over the Bellagio fountains. And that is the red carpet stage. I don't know if that's the same thing as where Roger Goodell is announcing the picks, but there's going to be a stage over the Bellagio fountains, and the people are going to walk across this after getting escorted by a boat, which is fantastically stupid. Like, it's wonderful. It's exactly what this show likes. Just go completely over the top and ridiculous with it. It's wonderful. I hope somebody falls in.
That was my first thought.
I hope, like, just chaos happens. It's going to be wonderful.
I hope a boat just won't, like, start.
But I still don't quite know if that's where Roger Goodell is going to be, because I kind of hope he's the one that might fall in, because that would be also hilarious. So the NFL draft's going to be here in April. They are going to close down the strip for those 3 days. Apparently, it's going to be the actual driving on the roads will be open overnight. So it's not like it's going to be just shut down for 72 straight hours. But yes, there will be a stage over the Bellagio fountains, which, if it's over the fountain, that's going to be terrible to watch.
I mean, unless they rig up some enormous video board.
Well, there's going to be, like, different parts of the strip will have, like, viewing areas and draft party things. But, like, if you want to, like, physically in person, if it's at the Bellagio, right? Like, not that many people can see that. I get, whatever. Going to the NFL draft is stupid. I don't understand how it's become such a big, popular live event. It's a stupid thing to watch, like, in person. It's definitely something to watch a TV production of.
There are teams called the Miami Dolphins that every year this is their Super Bowl.
I mean, I get it, but it's still
for
like,
a decade, that was the Browns.
It's a much better product to just watch on television. Like, I don't know. So, whatever. I'm still not quite understanding this, but there's going to be a stage over the fountains, and maybe that's where Roger Goodell is and he falls in. Maybe he's somewhere else. But there's going to be a boat with football players on it. That's the important part here.
Knowing Roger Goodell doing the whole boo me more, he's gonna throw himself into
probably,
the water.
Yeah.
And it's just gonna be like, ah, darn it. It's something kind of fun.
Marc-Andre Fleury will start tonight in Boston.
Justin Emerson tweeted that this morning. Pete DeBoer apparently hates Malcolm Subban more than Gerard Gallant did. But Fleury, who is skipping the All-Star game, has to miss either the last game before the All-Star break or the first game after the All-Star break. This is the last game before the All-Star break, so he will have to miss the Golden Knights' first game back on January 31st. But Marc-Andre Fleury overall, most important player on this team. Last 25 games, his save percentage is .893. He has been a below average NHL goalie for a long portion of this season. I used to come on this show saying the only way the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup is if Fleury gets back to a high level. It might be the only way they make the playoffs now is if Fleury gets back to a high level, because if he stays at .893 for the rest of the year, they might not make it in the Pacific Division. Big picture, though, on goalies. Fun tweet from Dmitry Filipovich. The Columbus Blue Jackets had their goalie walk for $70 million this summer, and are paying their three goalies less than $3 million combined this season, and now have the second-best 5-on-5 save percentage and third-best overall save percentage. Seems to be more and more of an argument to never pay goalies big money. They're basically the running backs of hockey. High-profile position, big production. They're critical to their team success, but they're replaceable, and their actual success is more dependent on the team around them than it is their actual skill. It's not quite as black and white for goalies as it is for running backs, but we're getting to a point where it's like, yeah, you probably shouldn't pay your goalie very much money. And Marc-Andre Fleury is a good example of that. He's 33rd in save percentage this season. He's 34th in goals saved above average, right? He's not one of the 31 best goalies in hockey this season. He's making $7 million. He is tied with Max Pacioretty as the second highest paid player on this team, and they've got to pay him that for two more seasons after this one. So the Golden Knights, they need Fleury to be good for this season to make the playoffs, and then if they want to make a run in the playoffs. But they need Fleury to be good for the next 2.5 seasons, or else they're eating a big contract for a goalie that's been below average for 25 games.
At what point do you just go, well, I think any goalie could let up 3 goals in the first period?
Yeah, I mean, they all would.
Like, anybody could do that.
Yeah. problem is if Marc-Andre Fleury is actually bad, like you got a $7 million goalie sitting there as your backup.
Yay.
Ronald Gillum decommitted from UNLV yesterday.
That one hurts. Ronald Gillum was the highest rated recruit that Tony Sanchez had brought in the 2020 class. Only one player that Arroyo has recruited is ranked higher than him, so he was one of the 15 best recruits in UNLV football history. The interesting thing with Gillum, though, is Sanchez's three best players that he had were all from the same high school in California. So Gillum's leaving. You could question if his teammates will. The quarterback, Doug Brumfield, does not look like he will. He has been all over Twitter about the new recruits and everything and Marcus Arroyo, so Brumfield seems good to go. But Justin Pinckney is an athlete out of this same school. Haven't seen or heard anything from him, so I think you can question what his commitment level is since his teammate just left. So it was a big weekend for Marcus Arroyo. He landed a bunch of new guys, but he's now lost two pieces. The offensive lineman, Dirk Nelson, that went to Colorado State, and now Ronald Gillum. UNLV's class, that was 89th yesterday when we talked, it's already dropped to 103rd with those two losses. So they're kind of right back to, well, average Mountain West class.
Pete DeBoer has changed the Golden Knights penalty kill.
So there's a story at sinbin.vegas on how Pete DeBoer adjusted the way the Golden Knights defend on the penalty kill. Two main differences now. They do not forecheck. They don't really pressure the other team when it's outside of the defensive zone. They don't really do so much in the neutral zone or in their actual offensive zone. They did that a lot with Gerard Gallant. It's a big reason why the Golden Knights scored so many shorthanded goals. They were an aggressive team looking to pick off some passes and get going the other way on a two-on-one. The Golden Knights were successful in scoring that way. But now it's more of let's pack the blue line and make it as hard as possible for the other team to gain entry into the zone so they can't even set up to try to score against us. The other change is when they're actually in their defensive zone, they are aggressively chasing the puck. Whereas before, they used to sit in more of a zone defense, just sort of in a box, and be passive. Now, they're much more aggressive. The Golden Knights' penalty kill has been terrible this season. They give up third most shots per minute, the ninth most high danger chances, and the sixth most expected goals. They've actually been fortunate not to give up more goals while killing penalties this season. So, completely changing everything? Probably a good idea. But I have to imagine, for Pete DeBoer, he came in and he gets the job with the Golden Knights, and the first thing he thinks about changing has to be the penalty kill. Has to be. Because he just scored four goals on it in 5 minutes in the playoffs last year. Like, he has to walk in and say, that's the biggest problem with this team. We got to change it.
Dan O'Halloran is the third best referee in the NHL.
So, this is from the Athletics NHL player poll. Dan O'Halloran is one of the referees that made the 5-minute major call in San Jose against the Golden Knights. It's got to hurt that the players think he's the third best ref in the NHL. Or maybe players are just stupid.
Well, I mean, based on the new rule, it's still a 5-minute major, isn't it?
Probably. So I do think, now that they can review these, I do think it still would have stood as a 5-minute major because, A, Cody Eakin did in fact cross-check him. Like, it was a penalty. And then the reasoning to go from a 2-minute minor to a 5-minute major is the referee's discretion. And
there's blood.
Yeah, he just saw Joe Pavelski leave the ice with his head bleeding. If he goes and reviews that, sees it's a cross-check, I bet he's leaving it as a 5-minute major. So I think even with the new rule, the Golden Knights still would have had to kill off a 5-minute penalty. So, yeah, the new rule wouldn't have changed very much. The other points of this poll, Marc-Andre Fleury, second most likely goalie that players want to have in Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final.
Who's first?
Carey Price.
Okay.
I don't think Carey Price has ever played in Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final. Jordan Binnington, who just won it, was like fourth. He just won Game 7 of the Stanley Cup.
Recency bias.
The worst answer of the poll, though, only 14% of NHL players pay attention to advanced stats.
I mean, in theory, that is supposed to be the coach's job to pay attention to the advanced stats and then just go, don't do that thing you were doing.
I guess, but you'd like them to actually maybe know what they're telling you or why they're telling you?
No, no, just no long twos.
We'll ask Eric Winalda what he thinks about advanced stats in soccer next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
The little man is off to the little city, right? So that's let him go.
I swear to God, I'm breaking your glasses.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Lights FC manager Eric Winalda is with us. How are you, Eric?
I'm good. I'm well. Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's a big improvement.
How has the off season been?
Busy. You know, that's the word. When you go through the season that we went through, and then you kind of have to look back and be reflective of okay, we're not going to let that happen again. It was there's a whole new way of doing things around here.
So what is that? Like, when you look back and say, we're not going to let that happen, like, what did you learn that, like, that didn't work?
Well, I mean, look, I remember you were actually spot on. I'm going to give you credit for it.
Hey, don't do that. That's a dangerous thing to do.
When you first came in here, you said, look, there's only, like, two guys that have any experience in this league. And at the end of the day, that's what hurt us. You know, we had to change the lineup so many times, forced to change, make real changes. So many times that we lost our identity halfway through, and then we were just not playing the same way I wanted to play. So we're going to try and keep it consistent this time.
So what is your expectation to actually have a consistent roster? Because the USL, I think most teams tend to have quite a bit of roster turnover throughout the year.
I'm not going to get into the circumstances, but you know, there's six guys that were with us, and then they weren't with us in June. So let's put it this way: when we do our player profiling. And we're looking for a new criteria of player that when we bring him here, we'd like him to stay here a little bit longer than and there's this new thing called the player handbook. Let's sign that so you know what the rules are. So I don't want to get too far into it.
The Eric Winalda player handbook.
Exactly.
Oh, I need a copy of
it. Oh, God. Maybe you can help me write it. I was listening to you with the whole stadium lease agreement. I mean, maybe you would be great for this. I mean, you could be the co-author of it, and my guys won't act up. That would be fantastic.
I didn't actually read it, but I saw a tweet this morning from one of the Athletics writers in the UK that was just going through ridiculous clauses that are in European contracts.
Right.
One was like, you can only party two nights a week.
Don't tell Kelsey that.
Yeah, I was about to say that's not a horrible clause.
Yeah,
Vegas.
Look, I think that when you look at the way that we just kind of went straight into what this club has represented, as far as the culture that was created, it was a little bit crazy first year, a little bit, and then a little half crazy, half soccer. In the second year, but I think it'll be more about the soccer this season.
Well, given, before we get into the actual soccer, the impending sale of this team from Brett Lashbrook, what was the offseason for you? Because it's like, oh, I don't know, this guy's my owner now. Is he still my owner? Like,
what was the original date? I think it was sometime in June when Brett agreed to.
Yeah, it was during the season.
Right.
Because I remember asking him, are you going to own the team through the rest of this year?
And you'll get varied answers to that. but look, Brett is still with us. He's still in the office. The new group and this pending vote, which will be on February 5th. You could see our fans are tweeting about it. They're all...
Will it for sure be on February 5th?
February, yeah, right? Yeah,
they extended it once.
Tell us on the 3rd, and then, originally it was supposed to be on December 5th, and then there was a two-month delay. So, look, I think that the undercurrent here is there's a lot of excitement. And you got to get really organized if you're going to make a bid like this. I know Mayor Goodman was talking about how the initial bid was we were going to be the 17th team, and now it's the 31st. So that's how much has changed in between the two bids. So who those players are, who is trying to get involved, who will be involved, this will all be news to me in the very near future.
For those of you that are unaware, Brett Lashbrook is owner of Lights FC. He has agreed to sell Lights FC as soon as the Renaissance Group, which is a group owned by Seth Klarman, and the city of Las Vegas come to an agreement to sell that group the land around Cashman Field.
So it's a real estate deal right now. Yes. The soccer component of that needs to still get figured out.
Yeah, and Carolyn Goodman has made it a priority that soccer be part of this deal.
We love her. How can you not? I actually have a little bobblehead of Oscar in my office, just as a constant reminder of how lucky we are to have her.
Does the bobblehead come with showgirls behind him?
Of course. I'll take a picture for you. It's pretty terrific. He's phenomenal. He was in our team picture as was she, and it's just we're very fortunate to have them enthusiastic about soccer.
Are we getting like a preseason schedule anytime soon? Shouldn't you be playing those games soon?
So last year, this is one of the things that I won't get into the specifics, but last year I think we started on January 9th. A couple things factor in now. The MLS teams are starting the season earlier, so it becomes a little bit more problematic for us because we start later, that there's really not a window in there to get the preseason game that you want against an MLS side. We originally were trying to get one against Kansas City, but that would mean that we would have to go find them in Phoenix, and that fell through. So what we decided is that our schedule in February is really to kind of take a page of what we learned last year. Kim coming out of the gates, having to play on the road and not being able to figure that out. We spent the entirety of preseason last year at home, and we invited everybody to us. And then we got on the road, and we had no idea how to be on the road. So we're going to try and remedy that. I'm going to take him on the road, probably to L.A., probably to O.C., most likely maybe even Salt Lake, but we're still trying to iron it out.
So will there be a home preseason game?
There should be. There's a window on the 15th that we will try and put something in there, but I don't anticipate that being all the bells and whistles with everything else going on. It's just a game for us to practice and to hone in, so...
How many players do you have? You guys have, what, 12 technically signed
14.
At the moment?
14.
14 signed at
the moment. So we are, we're half a practice. but it's, look, again, we had to let a lot of guys go, and we've made those decisions, and we feel really good about the players we picked up positionally. We lost some guys to other teams. Irvin Parr will be playing against us in San Diego in the first game, which should be interesting. And then it looks like Preston is going to be playing in San Antonio. But we had our opinions about whether the guys we brought in, we consider them an upgrade. So we're in a good spot up front.
I mean, I'm not going to criticize you for letting players go after you missed the playoffs.
Correct.
20 teams.
Well, I mean, let's not get too carried away with if we're being technically correct here. Of the 15 goals that Parra scored, 11 of them were against the four worst defenses in the league. So,
man, I love those kind of stats.
You do love
that.
That's why I'm
saying
only one goal against a playoff team.
That is a great stat.
Unless it was a penalty kick, he wasn't scoring against good teams. So we looked at that too. And so we went after some players that have a little bit more experience and are going to show up in big games.
So your first game on the road, San Diego Loyal SC.
Yeah, that nice jersey
team
you're wearing today.
Wearing
what is wrong with you?
Landon Seriously. Donovan U.S. jersey.
Careful,
you
keep
today.
Wearing that thing, your hair will fall out.
Oh, man. Not nice.
Boy, so, my hair's falling out. I honestly think I want to know where the camera's going to be for this game because it's just going to be a bunch of people on Twitter just trying to see whose bald spot's bigger.
Oh, okay.
That's really going to be a thing. So
wait, what is your relation? Like, are you and Landon Donovan friends? You hate each other? Do you not have a relationship?
I'm not entirely sure if he has any friends. He's a really hard guy to understand. He's very complex. I got in trouble a couple of months ago because he said, what's it going to be like to coach against, Landon Donovan? And my initial response was, well, it's going to be great, but I think we're going to have to wait a year until he's licensed to do that because you can't just snap your fingers and decide to be a coach. You have to go through the process. So, it'll be interesting to see how the league handles that.
So wait, he's not licensed?
There's no way that he has license unless they're going to expedite the process or expedite the process.
It's Landon Donovan.
Right. So let's just pave the way for the little guy a little bit more. That's just the way we do things.
Wait, all right. How do you feel if we go back to 2018 World Cup, Landon Donovan doing the commercial for Wells Fargo while wearing a Mexican national team shirt?
Well, I don't know.
Let's drag out some old stuff.
Look, the stuff, to quote him, I don't care what he does. I don't care.
You should, though.
Why?
It's infuriating.
To who?
You can't wear the Mexican national team shirt when you're one of the greatest U.S. national players ever.
That would be a Landon thing to do.
Well, that's what
I certainly wouldn't do that.
And in a commercial just to
course.
Make money off
yeah.
of it. It was an endorsement. Ridiculous.
And we all forgave him for that, right?
I don't know. I mean, I am still wearing his jersey.
Exactly.
Right now,
but that was more. Why don't you put on a Mexican jersey?
That
it's
was
the same
more
thing.
Just to pick at you than anything else.
Well, just go buy a Mexican jersey and put Donovan on it. It's the same thing.
So you guys play San Diego Loyal SC. It is, as far as storylines go, about as good as it gets for a USL game, because it'll be you and Landon Donovan, but also Irvin Parra and Raul Mendiola playing for San Diego Loyal.
And Eric Avila and Sal Zizzo and... Looks like Carlos Alvarez. So a bunch of guys have worn
even more now.
Yeah, so there's a few guys in there.
So they're going to be terrible in year one.
Well, who knows? Who knows? It's not my problem. I really don't care. But I think lights. We've got a pretty good idea of what we want to be. We want to get on the right track right off the bat. Unfortunately, they'll be in our way for them. But look, I think it's also sort of homecoming for me. Went to San Diego State. A lot of people have been, asking for tickets and saying they'll be there, and I'll say, we'll see you at the game, but, I'm not.
Yeah,
No, I guess you're right. Yeah. I can't win this one, no matter what happens. There's going to be.
Win it. What are you talking about?
No, I mean, but even if I win, there's going to be something to complain about.
For me?
Well,
not necessarily.
From somebody.
If you beat, I don't care what the score is. You beat San Diego in the first game. It's great. It's wonderful. You're playing Landon Donovan.
I'm actually not playing
Landon
Donovan.
I know
Donovan.
You're not. You're managing against Landon Donovan.
I think it's
Donovan.
His assistant coach that's going to be in charge.
All right, so you're managing against Landon Donovan's proxy. It's Raul Mendiola and Irvin Parra. Like, you guys, you just win it. Doesn't matter what happens. Just win the game, and it'll be great. It's all that matters.
It's that easy. Yeah.
It'll be terrific. Like, somehow, they're almost a bigger rival than Reno, and they haven't played a game yet.
There's a possibility of that. But, I think what, going back to where we went wrong last year,
I like that topic, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, the reality is I brought in some guys that needed their opportunity. They didn't fully embrace it. It's not an excuse. I'll take the hit for that. I chose them. So in my arrogance, I thought I could coach them through it. And then when you get into the games where the mistakes continue to mount up, it's on me to fix it. So these were hard conversations in the off season. These are guys that that really wanted to continue on their journey, and we had to say goodbye. So they've been replaced by players who will not make the same mistakes.
Since you're going to be coaching against a lot of guys you have coached, do you know what sort of mind games? I bet I can get him to get a red card. What you're going to do is you're going to run up and you're going to say this, and he's going to swing it.
Honest to God, it with Parra, it might be that simple. So I'd say, yes! that's pretty. That's a pretty good assessment there. But look, I think the way that we approach this game, the way that we went into the season last year, you got to remember, I lost my entire midfield after 10 games. So we were dominating games and not scoring the first part of the season. And I think we all talked about that. And 65% of the ball and not getting quality chances. So we were losing games that we should have won. The best game is that RGV game. I mean, I went back and looked at it. I went back and watched it, as painful as that was. They had, through the 90-minute game, they had two shots on target in the run of play. Okay? Two shots on target, and somehow they scored five.
Yeah,
and we scored twice on ourselves, and one of them was a penalty kick. So, and you walk out of that one saying to yourself, all right, how did that happen? And then you really get down to the real problems that were occurring, and it just took a long time for us to get to catch our wind, to be a good team, to have our feet underneath us. And that was you can't do that. We have to have a better start. We were 20 games in, and we were finally figuring it out.
We scored twice on ourselves. Not ideal.
No, that's a bad one. Or penalty kicks was the other one. We just that penalty area is that line's there for a reason. Don't kick them when they're in there. Pretty simple concept, guys.
All right, we're going to take a break. You want to stick around for the last segment? All right,
absolutely.
Eric Winalda will be back with us after this.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Tyler Bischoff is...
better with numbers and stuff.
Technically correct.
Math? You're giving me math?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Lights FC manager Eric Winalda is in studio with us. If you didn't see the news earlier today, the NFL draft is going to be here in April on the Strip. They're going to have a stage on the Bellagio Fountains, and they're going to have a boat that takes the prospects To the actual stage.
I didn't know that. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
No, they just have a meeting like now where they're announcing
okay. So
this.
I'm not totally.
No, you're not a complete
out of the loop.
Yeah. So, but yes.
Thanks for keeping me in the loop.
Would you jump in?
The boat?
Yes. No, in the water. Out of the boat into the water.
Oh yeah.
Or after you find out you've been drafted, you cannonball in.
There's going to be a mix-up like that. It depends on who's on the boat. I mean, these are big people. there could be
if a boat sinks,
there's a 350 pound guy that's going to try and negotiate how to get out of a boat that's on the water, and that's just it's good TV.
I mean, I hope somebody like strips down to a swimsuit and does a cannonball into the water as a celebration after getting drafted.
Just like the ripoff suit, an NBA, now you're just wearing a Speedo and you jump it. That'd be great.
It'd be a great celebration of getting drafted.
That would be right up Brett Lashbrook's alley. But I don't think we're ready for that.
Yes, we're not. I don't think too many people care enough about any sort of draft in American soccer.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, we certainly do. I think in soccer, I remember the original draft. I was the one that went on the stage and announced Brian McBride as the number one overall pick, and just to see how far we've come from that point. I mean, at some point we ran out of players. I mean, I was drafting guys I knew from high school. I mean, it was ridiculous. So I mean, it's a different world now.
I mean, that sounds like how you built your roster last year for Lights, though.
Well, almost, yeah. No, we had talent and potential, and what we learned is that that's not enough.
Can you steal Danny Masofsky from LAFC?
I know, you
probably can't speak anything about
no,
that.
No, it's an ongoing negotiation.
Really?
You know, we spent last week watching LAFC. We, you know, Bob Bradley, their coach, is a friend, and he invited me to be a part of their staff to a certain extent, where I'm there with them in their meetings and learning about how they do stuff. And we spoke a lot about Danny. Danny was someone that we wanted to be here last year, but we. You know, he understanding that he went to Reno. I think that part of that was, you know, an LV boy, you know, Vegas boy, wanted to get out of Dodge for a little bit, you know. So being in LA, you should be very proud of that. That's when you get those guys to draft you or to at least bring you in and try and sign you, that's a big deal.
Saying it would be terrific if you had Danny Masofsky on your roster.
Absolutely. Yeah. We brought in a guy named Seko Kone who had some time with Philadelphia Union. And Bethlehem Steel went back to Holland. He would be a great compliment with Danny. I think that the two of them would really appreciate each other.
Do you ever feel like disadvantaged being an American as a manager?
I don't. In what sense?
Just comparative to like if you wanted to go try to be a Premier League manager, you.
Oh, because of the whole Bruce Arena thing. Yeah, somebody actually brought
that
up.
Team, and we always are just like, who's slightly American, but not super American.
Well, I mean, look, I'm. You know, last year I didn't have the. You know, you have to go through a licensing process first of all, and you have to be recognized by UEFA, by the European Licensing Committee. Like, basically, you have to be able to do this. A lot of Americans don't have those licenses. Jesse Marsh, who was the coach at New York Red Bull, went through that process in the middle of the season, and now he coaches at Salzburg playing in the Champions League. So it's just a matter of dedication,
checking some boxes.
Well, you got to be able to do it.
You take the course, and
they can still fail you. I mean, they can still say, "Yeah, you're not good enough." But which was hilarious when I saw Jesse trying to speak German in one of these Twitter hits. It was phenomenal. And he's learning German as almost like an Austrian Swiss guy. So it's got like this accent to it, and he says "Yeah" at the end of everything. Like, you know, it's hilarious. So anyway,
how's your Spanish?
My Spanish is good enough. I mean, I speak Spanish, German, and English. So, you know, that's what I'll do. I'll do a press conference.
When you say you speak all those, like you legitimately speak them, or you speak them well enough to coach soccer?
I speak them clearly well enough to do soccer. But I mean, in German, for example, you can understand it, you can speak it, you can be conversational, and then you can be intellectual. So I'm somewhere in between conversational and intellectual. Some of those words just aren't fair, man. Bahnhofstrasse. Like, why is it that long? I mean, they put like three concepts together in one word, so it's rough.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, the U.S. Open Cup changed its format. MLS teams are coming in around earlier. Do you have any idea? Would that mean you guys might play an MLS team around earlier than usual?
Right. So we'll hit that first game April 7th, 8th, or 9th. And then by winning that game, because it's a they've made it much more difficult to qualify. So we'll probably be in the June area. So we'll get the summer, and hopefully if all goes well, we'll get LAFC or we'll get the Galaxy.
That's one of the goals I want you guys to hit, is just play an MLS team in the US Open Cup.
We will. That is one of our goals this year. I mean, honest to God, that was the day we announced the selling of the team. So that makes it hard to win when your guys are confused. So.
Okay, Landon Donovan for Sarah Quinalda.